Welcome to the Azure for Sports podcast, hosted by the Azure for Sports team at Microsoft.
Hello and welcome everyone to the latest episode of the Azure for Sports podcast. I'm Suzanne Tedrick, and as always, I'm joined by my Azure partner in crime, Mr. John Flynn. How's it going today, John?
I'm doing well, Suzanne. Good to see you again. I'm excited. Another episode, and we're still using video, so we haven't broken the internet yet.
Yeah, we're not quite at the Kim Kardashian stage just yet, but we're going to get there.
Close.
I have faith. I feel it. Awesome. Well, I'm truly, truly looking forward to today's episode. We are joined today by Alistair Crowley and Carl Barton from Fanbase, which has branded itself as the world's first sports operating system, providing robust solutions for sports teams and leagues. And I can't wait to get into a deeper dive with them to understand what's going on with Fanbase, what's new, what's happening, and how they really are transformative for sports teams and leagues. And so with that, Alistair, Carl, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks very much for having us. We're very excited to do this.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. We're always interested in having the latest and greatest in sports technology here, and Fanbase is truly in that league. And so just to get started, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourselves and a bit about Fanbase?
Yeah, of course. If I start, I'm Alistair, CEO and co-founder of Fanbase. My background is I was born in London, raised in Edinburgh, which is in Scotland, which is its own country. I was part of the UK, worked at a scale-up in Sydney after university and college, and then came back home to Edinburgh again, where I call home, and worked at a consultancy there for 10 years. Became a director, board member. We got investment for that company about 12 weeks ago, and then managed to get myself into full time at a Fanbase, where you're very excited to be a part of now on full energy.
And I'm Carl, so I'm CTO. So my kind of time sort of runs parallel with Ali's in that I'm originally from England, near Liverpool. I moved to Scotland because it's amazing. My background's kind of all in professional services, providing kind of a data consultancy. I heard about Fanbase on the side that Ali was working on with our co-founder, Mikey, who's not here today, and just occasionally hearing little bits here and there from Ali and Mikey. And then I was kind of thrilled when they came in April 2021 to say they've secured a little bit of investment. They can start building a small team. And kind of jumped at the opportunity to get involved, kind of start building the company from the ground up. And it's kind of snowballed from there. You know, I think during that initial conversation, we had enough for maybe a team of two or three of us.
Yeah.
And we're now looking at a team of 10. So it's we had to kind of grow into it very quickly.
Yeah. And from that team of two or three, not even to include me.
No.
I'm like, I am probably most useless person to get this product moving. So we need to get some technology and design resource to make this to take this to the next level. So yeah.
That's a huge milestone in the company now that we hired Ali recently, which is fantastic. He's always been around, but now he's actually part of the company.
Fantastic. Yeah. A milestone higher, if there has ever been one. Good. So I don't know, Ali. I usually introduce myself as the least useful or important person in the room. So I may challenge you for that title, my friend. We'll have a virtual armor. So you ready? 1, 2, 3. All right. So what I've had the privilege of having a bunch of conversations with you. We got introduced to each other by a mutual friend. And I love the stuff that you guys are doing around transformation is a good word for it, right? But there's a lot of facets to that, right? As far as working in the sports arena, and especially in a fan-focused or fan-reaching capacity, there's ticketing, there's engagement with the fan on and off game days. Talk to me a little bit about what was the genesis of Fanbase and what was the leading factors of you deciding that, you know what, this is probably a business on its own and started heading down that path.
Yeah, definitely. I'll take this one and Carl can definitely fill in the gap. So it was a few years ago, my brother, so the background is Michael, who's the other co-founder, is my brother. He was always a sports star. So he was in the rugby team, the national kind of setup, doing really, really well on that side of things. Whereas I was trying my best to play some sports, but my skills were always better put elsewhere, be that in the bar area or doing other tasks for the team to make myself useful. So we stumbled across an issue at one particular sports team. So it's a community team in Edinburgh, and half their funding just got ripped away from them, just very short notice. And they budgeted for that for the next year. And with 50% gone, they were in a situation where they were potentially not going to be able to sustain the team. It was really critical. It was like, this could be make or break for next year. Like coaches, travel, like that type of budgeting kit. I took a deep dive into that to understand, okay, why is this happening? What has happened? Because we knew that there was potentially between 20 and 30,000 people that were connected in some way or another to this team globally, like over the years.
Yep.
So I said, right, okay, I'm kind of connected into this. Let's start by looking at the information. Like who do we know that's connected with this team? And let's start thinking about how we can get in touch with them. And I got the Excel spreadsheet through, and there was a list of about 100 names, then about 20 postal addresses. And then I said, well, do we know if these are accurate? Oh, I don't know. They might be, I don't really know. It's not my spreadsheet.
Right.
Okay, here we go. We just started going around all the different points. So, okay, how do people interact with us? They'll come down to the club. I don't know. So everything was done in the old way. Handshakes, slaps on the back. Yeah. Oh, come in for a beer. Bring your cash. So it was operated like that. So as soon as things changed, it was a nightmare to try and get things sorted out because we were starting from scratch. So the genesis of the idea was, how should these teams operate? Because this cannot be the way to, you look at that, where you have to know how to interact with them through some sort of osmosis and how to buy from them versus your local shop, which is, we're open all the time. You can go into our online shop or a physical shop and, you know, digitally we're all connected up. So that was really the genesis of it. And from there, we just started to look at how, like, okay, what tools are available right now in the marketplace? And again, it was quite unsuitable. So we had a pure ticketing play kind of tech tool that was global. Let's plug that together with email provider. That, okay, that kind of works. Right, we want to do membership subscriptions. Okay, we've got something else now. And before you knew it, there was like 6 or 7 different things all kind of not really talking to each other. And we may have had a bit more data, but it was just horrible.
Right.
And there's just, okay, who's going to take this on? Nobody's got the skills. So we're like, okay, there's something in this.
That's awesome. I love that. And look, what you've described is global and runs the gamut of any sports organization, whether they are semi-pro or pro, right? In terms of a handshake, a wink, a nod, and a slap on the back is how we've done things. We're going to modernize ourselves here. But to your point then, Ali, you end up with lots of very disparate areas of data that are important, but so much more important when they're connected together. And that connectivity becomes the issue, right? I don't know if the mailing addresses are correct. And I don't know if Joe Smith here is the same as Joe Smith there. And I don't understand that. But so in that example of the genesis of Fanbase and how you came to be, how did you then tackle the other side of that problem? Is, okay, I know what needs to be done. I know modernization is coming, build it, they will come type of thing. How did you get the people who were used to interacting with the handshake and the nod and the wink and that to adopt a new way of doing things?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess part of that was luck in a really odd way. So the pandemic brought about this huge change in how people buy and interact because they had to.
Right.
So for us, we were battling to try and get our first couple of teams on board. So we'd done our research. You know, after that initial idea, we'd gone, okay, let's just call as many people as we can from all these different rugby clubs. We posed as university students to try and get people to talk to us, because you're going to talk to us if we're doing a university project rather than trying to just like create tech. So we got everyone on the phone for like an hour, which is great. Everybody up to Liverpool Football Club, who were really supportive and generous with their time, and Everton and others, all the way down to that, you know, very local team. So we kind of knew all the different variables that were kind of challenges. Then trying to battle to get those first teams on board, we were buying people a couple of card, like, just take these two card readers and use our horrifyingly simple, like, couldn't really call it an MVP piece of software together, and see how you get on. So that initial battle was really hard. And that was just before the pandemic hit. So March 2020, we saw this huge, later on in that year, when every sports team was mandated to pool, they had to have track and trace.
Yeah,
that actually was it just snowballed up, and everyone needed something, and we just happened to have the right tool at the right time.
And that helped us with that initial traction in a kind of perverse way. But that's a challenge we see with both clubs and fans, is this kind of, in some cases, resistance, in some cases, an enthusiasm to go digital. And we're talking to more and more kind of leaders in clubs now, who are understanding the value of that data, of knowing who their fans are, for providing a great experience for the fans, but also to be able to go and talk to sponsors and say, do you know what, we've got this many fans, we actually know who they are, you know, we've got their contact details, we know who our most valuable people are, we know how much they spend with our club, we know how long they've supported us. So that's a really compelling message when you go to sponsors. For fans, it's a similar story. You've got people who are real enthusiasts. It's so much more convenient for them, or just nice to have, to be able to engage with their club digitally, whether that's buying a ticket or looking at some highlights or just feeling more connected. You know, it's another touch point. But obviously it's really important for us to be building something that supports the older style, the more traditional style of fan who kind of wants to turn up at the gate and pay cash, and how can we bring that data into the clubs to build a complete picture of the world to clubs. But it is kind of amazing the adoption we've seen. You know, we've had some very kind of experienced supporters who've turned up at games, you know, with the app on their phone, and they've got their digital ticket on their phone, and Ali's had little photos with them, because we quite often get some games ourselves, and it's amazing kind of what people will, you know, people will adopt kind of things. And
you're right. Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the cool things around that, and it's funny, right? You have your app up here. There really is, and we see it across all sports, right? There really is that divide of that feverish supporter who want the latest of everything and will do outside of their norm behavior to go be first or do something unique or do something cool and throw it up and, hey, look at me, I got this. And then there's those, Carl, like you said, right? I show up. I pay cash at the gate. I always sit in this section. If there's no seats in that section, I'm going to the pub and I'll watch the game in the pub. That's it, right? And I think you're spot on there. And Suzanne, you and I do this for countless conversations, right? Is when you are engaging with fan engagement possibilities, is you have to run, and you guys have said it, right? You have to run the gamut. You can't exclude anybody. Right. So, and then therein lies the rub, right? Those are some of the difficult conversations that we get into around how do you satisfy everybody but continue that forward momentum that we've got.
Yeah. No, agreed, John, for sure. I think it's absolutely critical. And Carl and Alec, you hit on something that I would love to kind of hear a little bit more insight on, like when you were making those initial calls to the organizations and you were having that resistance, because I find that it's almost this cognitive dissonance where, you know, people want the latest and the greatest when it comes to technology and innovation and cutting edge, but when it comes to the actual, you know, work of adoption, especially when it comes to technology, there's usually cultural barriers, there's monetary barriers. So just curious, when you were getting this resistance, what were the themes that were coming up the most in this journey? And aside from obviously with results, how did you speak to that resistance when you were, you know, initially starting out?
Yeah. So I guess one of the most common ones we would get is, this all looks great, but we've got a really old support base, would be the norm. Our fans probably won't use this. And that was really interesting. So when we started to get a bit closer to the clubs, and this is one of the benefits, right? We're able to go at the size we're at with the clubs that we have, we can go and visit all of them. It's amazing. So we can go and see these fans. We can actually go and meet this email address and this name. We can go and meet that person, you know, and see what's going on. So we can understand that there is a pocket of fans that really just like the way that things have always been. And to change, you're going to have this huge reason for that to happen. And the pandemic was that reason, but that's obviously changing now. How do you get over that? It was, well, you've got to address your club. If your club is going to be here, if your sports organization is going to be here in like 5 years, let alone 10, 15 years, you have to stop. You have to recognize and look after that older group. So we're not saying, you know, here's the generation over here, but that is candidly a small and ever decreasing population size. So whilst you have to make sure that these guys are really looked after and are well looked after, you have to turn around and start addressing this whole other side of the population who are digitally native, who need things in 10-second clips, who want everything with a couple of touches of a button because they can do it everywhere else. And when you turn around to a sports team, they're still stuck in this really old way of dealing with things. So it's a little bit of, how do you get over there? You have to show them what's out there and what other people are doing. So we're lucky enough, we work with some teams that have really addressed this beyond like your wildest dreams. Decreasing fan audiences is a challenge in a lot of places. There are teams completely doing the opposite, going from 179 people 8 years ago to entertaining 3,000 people at their games, at this lower end of the spectrum, outside of that elite level of sport. So that huge trend buck is, you just turn your head and address everybody else as well as your older fan base. So that was one of the key things that we saw, we heard, and then we addressed by just making people aware of this other group that they could be dealing with.
I think the thing with sports fans is that they're not shy. So
no, they are.
They're vocal, and there's demand for this. And so, you know, if we make a mistake, that's on Twitter. You know, people make a noise. But equally, we just get a fraction of what their clubs get, which is, you know, it's 2022. Why can't I buy my ticket online? You know, what's the answer for this? Or, you know, so fans make noise, and fans actually, you know, help us there drive change.
For sure. I mean, do you guys see, you mentioned you were having conversations with Liverpool and Everton. I mean, clearly, the cream of the crop there as far as a modern facing organization with a large tech stack footprint, with a large existing and growing international fan base. But when you guys go and you talk to folks such as Kelty Hearts or Elgin City, is the conversation different? Those localized teams, right, versus those big teams, and I obviously we know the answer is yes to that, right? But how is it different? How do you drag them, or is it a drag, or does this need a nudge into this new modern world?
Yeah, totally depends on who's leading, you know, who's running the show at that individual team. So at those two that you mentioned, so Kelty Hearts is a team in Scotland in an area called Fife. The guys running that place are exceptionally strong commercially and understand the community draw. Same with Elgin, which is in the Highlands. Again, very strong community sense, very digitally minded, understand the power of data. So they really do get it, but they're very conscious of balancing the approach. So we need to make sure that... fans that are coming and doing things different ways to digitally going through the mobile apps or platforms online, how do we still try and connect up? So they're challenging us to make sure that we can all kind of sync up all of the data together. So they're excellent. The challenges are so different. So yeah, Liverpool or, you know, any Premier League team or any elite sport, their challenge is, oh my God, I've got, you know, huge deal over here with this ticketing provider, huge deal over here with somebody else, and huge chunks of things. So I'm trying to, how do I pull this all together somehow to then give a better fan experience globally? And how do I monetize that global audience like Coca-Cola have managed to do? So everybody knows who, everyone knows who Liverpool is, and everybody knows who Coca-Cola is, but Coca-Cola are making a silly amount more money than Liverpool are globally. So how, you know, how do you, what's happened? Like, how do you do that from a Liverpool standpoint? Totally different set of challenges. Outside that top 1%, there are infinite business leaders and sports organization leaders that are doing amazing things. And that's where we played. It's totally different challenges, but the people involved are in the large part exceptional. But we are in a huge shift in the UK of the, I guess, people who have run sports teams in a very old fashioned way. We're now getting board directors changing. So a new person comes in going, we need to change the way this is happening. But in an odd sense, that's just happening in the last 5 years. It's really behind the rest of the planet.
Talked a little bit about the goals of the clubs, but speaking a little bit more about fan base and their goals, like obviously you're achieving, you know, quite a bit of success. You're growing. You've got Ali on board officially, you know. So can you talk a little bit about some of the highlights that you're really, really proud of that fan base has accomplished? And I guess anything in terms of strategic goals that you're looking for towards the future?
I think kind of generally, if we just talk in reasonably general terms about our strategy, and we've talked about this idea of there's lots of different providers kind of working in sports tech or crossing over into our space, you know, whether that's on engagement or ticketing or memberships, whatever kind of service they're providing. What we see quite often as a pattern, and you described us at the start as this kind of sports OS, which is a term we are kind of starting to throw around. If you look at any of these providers, they tend to go very broad. So they provide ticketing across many different industries. So they provide ticketing to sport, they provide ticketing to theatres, to, you know, festivals and so on, or they provide a membership service. So all of these providers are going very, very broad in what they do in terms of the industries they serve, but specific in terms of the tools they provide, i.e. it's ticketing or it's membership or it's content and so on. Whereas we're kind of positioning ourselves quite differently because we go narrow in terms of the industry we serve. We are specifically for sports, but, you know, we are broad in terms of the services we offer for sports clubs. So to give you an example, we've talked to clubs where they are using they've shown us how they currently use their ticketing system, and these are kind of football teams in Scotland, and they're talking about using events and creating orders and things, and they don't even have the terminology of a fixture or a fan. And that's totally absurd to us because we're trying to build them a whole connected tool set. And if you are a Liverpool, then you can afford to invest. And we've seen this in the Prem. We've seen it in the Premier League in England. Maybe in the top tier in Scotland as well, and in teams in the US that we've spoken to as well across various sports, we've seen that they've invested massively in their tech, and they've got the resources to pull all of these services together. That doesn't exist when you go a little bit down the leagues, you just don't have that resource. So that's kind of like strategically the way we're heading, and I think that's our kind of point of difference. In terms of what we've achieved over the past year or so, I think launching, sort of being part of the relaunch of sport in the UK after COVID was, you know, it was quite a joyous moment. You know, everyone had been kind of cooped up, and we had kind of restricted audiences, and it all needed to be digital because you needed to know who was in the ground and how many people there were. So that was quite a celebration, really, and that. that was really with just our pilot product. So it was kind of hung together with kind of sticky tape. so that was it was interesting. So I think actually just getting the first fan through the gate is one of our biggest achievements.
Good for you. Absolutely. Celebrate all milestones, right? So I think, Carl, just to dive a little bit deeper into that, right? The engine room of Fanbase here. So there's clearly a lot of technology options out there that people can use to build something on. And I love the sports OS concept that you've got, right? And I think it's totally applicable when you think about the fan engagement process, whether it's ticketing, what do you do if you're in there? What do you do for no shows? Can you still capture the revenue? All that, I think it's phenomenal. And what made you choose, I think it's a very wise decision. Obviously, I'm a little bit biased, right? But what made you choose the tech stack that you guys chose to build this sports OS on top of?
Yeah. So, I mean, just starting with Azure, working in the cloud is a kind of no-brainer for us as a startup. It's, it takes away all of that CapEx cost up front, you know, so it lets us get started easily. We can try things out, you know, we kind of love the library of resources that are available to an Azure. So if we just want to try something new, we can spin up a service very easily and basically build scalable, reliable solutions. You know, given that one of our services is ticketing, it is challenging technologically. You get this kind of burst demand where you'll have no activity and then all of a sudden you get a big spike of activity. And
correct.
And not having to manage that infrastructure when you're a team of 10, being able to kind of lean on a Microsoft to take that pain away from us is massive. And then in terms of really just the actual, you know, the code that we're writing on a day-to-day, it's the skills that we've got available. You know, we've got Edinburgh and really the south of Scotland has become a real hub for kind of tech skills. But there's lots of kind of skills in the Microsoft stack. So it just means we've got people near us who we can hire and bring in and kind of build a brilliant team locally. So that's kind of one of the real big driving factors. You know, you tend to build with what you're comfortable with, right? And if if my expertise was in a different tech stack, it's likely that Fanbase would be being built in that.
All right, but we needn't dwell on that because obviously that won't happen. But I mean, I'm getting here. So I think the thing with a plethora of options out there, right, is not only, and correct me if I'm wrong, both Carl and Ali, right, is not only having the tech stack that gets you to where you are today, but also provides you that runway to continue your scale at your pace, right, at your cost metrics, at your budget availability. Because some of the things that I'm super interested in is how you guys are managing your international expansion. Right? We're talking a lot about the UK market. We talk a lot about Scotland, different country market, right, within the United Kingdom. But you're also in the US, right? How does that look? I'm very interested in it from two facets, right? Number one is the tech. How do you scale to become an international organization from a technology footprint perspective? And then two, from a business perspective, how different is it doing business in a different country than your home country? Where are the learnings there?
It's we've had lots of conversations about this, haven't we, Carl? About when and how and where. So we worked on a principle of right now with our funding and our team size, it needs to be a pool. So we're not gonna strategically go and land somewhere at this stage and go crazy. Right. But if we get a pool and we can validate that the people that we're getting the pool from are really on top of it, which they are, then that's worth investing time and money into. So the strategy we have for getting into new territories is focus on where the pool is coming from, validate the people are like really on top of it, and work closely with them to make sure that we've got the product into the best place possible, wrap the right kind of business processes and services around that pilot in a way that we believe can be scalable. And then that's our start point. And that could be anywhere in the US. It just happens to be in one particular place. So we can that's what we need to focus on and grow from there. So And we've also got fantastic, like we've focused a lot last year on making sure we had good business advisors around us. So we've got an advisory board and investor group that we've got the CEO, my first boss in Sydney, is now living and working and being, he's a CEO of a big company in San Francisco. We've got an investor in New York. These guys know the market in there, in those two, in those two states. So we're pooling a lot of, and people have got lots of international market expansion experience. So before we jump in fully, we're kind of figuring all of that out with the advisory board and the investment team.
And we have kind of gone for slightly restrained growth. If you look at, while we considered ourselves to be in this sort of pilot phase, we actually specifically looked for clubs local to us, as Ali said earlier, so we can actually get to the games, meet the email addresses.
Right.
So it means we can lean on the confidence that we've, you know, where there were gaps in the product. We've been sealing those gaps up by working with clubs, by working with fans locally before we kind of roll that out. So, you know, we're only really starting now to actually even talk to just south of the border in England kind of thing and around the UK. So we've been cautious in the way we've grown so that we've done as much learning as possible in a controlled environment before going for an expansion. And then to kind of bring that back to the tech side, obviously again, being cloud-based, it just means we're in a position where we can spin up our technology local to the clubs that we're servicing. So, you know, our tech's largely hosted in Microsoft's UK data centers currently. But again, it's another perk of being sort of part of this global network is that we can spin this up wherever we want to service our product. As for the business side, we're still figuring that out. You know, how do we scale the servicing and support? But it really does come down to the product, and the product can be self-servicing and self-documenting, and that's what we aim to get to. Clubs sign up for our product and use it themselves. It's intuitive. Fans don't need teaching how to use it.
So it's a very, very heavy product-led growth strategy.
Well, it's very clear that it's working. I noticed that the company was ranked on the Sports Tech 50 as an innovative company. So you're definitely getting a lot of accolades for the work that you're doing. And so I was just curious, how does it feel to be working in a sports tech company in this day and age? Like what's been the most fun thing that you've done so far, or what's the most exciting thing that for your work?
I'll answer for me, and Carl and I have got quite a few. For me, one of the most fun things, so I guess there was a moment where Carl, Mikey and I looked at each other. We had a Christmas party last year at a pub, and we looked at each other, and there's this table filled with people, and we had some interns that we'd invited down had worked really hard, and we did a small paid internship program with them. And so we had this table filled with like kind of 10, 12 people. And we were just like, this is, we created this from, you know, just this silly idea that we had at one point. All these people are here because we've kind of all pulled it together and they're all laughing and having a great time. So that was an amazing, that was a lovely moment. And I think as well from just look, because we're a startup, there's 10 of us in the business at the minute, having a phone call with Marjorie, so I'm on the phone to this person, you know, to a fan, Marjorie, who cannot for the life of her find her tickets. She thinks she's bought them. She's got an app somewhere, but something's gone horribly wrong. So I'm on the phone to her as customer service. And then 2 hours later, I'm pitching Fanbase to a VC firm for, you know, six, seven figures. And like, you're having to switch between these modes, which is actually, you know, that's hell of a context switching situation to be in. But it is amazing. And the fact that I can turn around to product Mikey and say, who was at PayPal before he joined us, and say, hey, Marjorie, we just had a call with Marjorie. These things happened, and we chat about that. And before you know it, we've written up the user stories. We're going to validate those before they go into the backlog to then get designed to then be improved. That's like, it's a mad chaotic cycle of things, but it's
so tangible that you find so often in tech you're working on things that you're so far removed from an end user. If you're working on some kind of back-end system moving audit data for pensions around, it your code maybe never sees the light of day, or it could be amazing stuff that just it runs totally in the background. Whereas our team, you know, Ali has that conversation, Mikey writes up that user story, my team, you know, are working on the code the next week, and we go to a game actually in person, or we flip the telly on it and our app's there, kind of thing, you know, that's actually being used. You know, we can see all the fans in that stadium, and they've all kind of, you know, they've got our app, they've got that technology, and Marjorie's problem solved. And it's really cool being able to basically to tell your auntie what you do, you know, when an old relative asks kind of, what are you working? It's actually amazing being able to say, well, this.
That is cool, right? It sounds like a lot of pinch me moments, right? So I love the story, right? That you look at something and go, wow, that was an idea not so long ago. And look at all these people around here having a laugh and raising the drink or sitting in a stand because of that idea that we had, right? I think that's super cool. Cole, one of the things that you said I think is critically important there, right? From a technology, from a technology position within a sports tech startup or even an established company, that line you said about being removed from the fan, I think that in itself is a critical piece that people need to solve in the sports tech industry, right? Because if you are removed from a fan, especially when you're doing fan engagement, when you're trying to get closer to the fan and provide that experience that is better than they had the game before or the year before, the season before, and helps them purchase tickets or maybe upgrades them to season tickets, or maybe they do their hospitality there, for example. I think the further you are from a technology perspective removed from that fan, the harder it is to put yourself in their shoes, right? And actually perform to the needs that you see right now, because it's easy. You get a spec on a piece of paper and you can go write some amazing code, but what does that do? Because you don't understand who you're writing it for. So I think it's a hell of a lot of hard work, and you guys are doing a lot of stuff and you're wearing a lot of hats, right? I mean, you're all doing customer service and doing VC pitches and then going out and seeing games, doing code reviews and user stories and marketing, all in the same hour sometimes, right? But that also is the benefit, I believe, right? So to get closer to the fan, you have to understand what their problems, but also what their flow, what their game day, what their wants are like, right? So I think one of the things that you guys do really, really well is that you run in this sort of sprint methodology based upon real use cases, based upon real scenarios. Like Margie, I've done it. I've sworn black and blue that I've bought a ticket, can't find my ticket, but I'm dealing with a large ticket provider in the United States. Tough is the answer. Yeah, tough. Yeah. I had to buy it again, right? I probably didn't buy it in the beginning because it's me, but I'd be tough, so I ended up buying it again. So I love that, right? I mean, so with all that, and I don't mean to steal all the oxygen in the room here, right? But what's next? What's this evolutionary growth for fan base? How do you guys see that next year, 5, 10?
Yeah, I think one of the most important things that we need to get much more into now that we've got this, you know, again, Carl, Michael, and I, we talk about the product starting to really get into an interesting place. So right now we are not far away from being able to serve the most local of teams to the largest of teams in our ticketing platform. So we're starting to compete at a really interesting level on that side of things. Hospitality and VIP, we've got a decent first product there that we've released V1. We're already itching to get to V2. And that, as soon as we get to V2, we're in an incredible place with that side of the product and subscriptions and things like that. So the Sports OS side, like how do you connect a sports team to a fan and how does a fan connect back and make that really valuable, the connection and communication and just elevate everything? For us, that's the next is answering that kind of call of, all right, you say you're a Sports OS, show me it. We're not far away from being there, which is a really cool thing. So for us, that's next. It's pretty hot off the press as of a couple of days ago, but we've just closed a fairly significant seed round in the UK for us. So that gives us our thank you. That gives us our the bags under my eyes tell a different story. That gives gives us the runway and the space to deliver on that kind of promise. It's just a case of now we've got the data. And again, for us, that's the most exciting part of this product. Yeah. We cracked the data problem first, and now we're building on top of that rather than the other way around. So just imagining what we could possibly do with that information for a fan and also for a club is
I'd say we've focused a lot in the last kind of 12 months of building what clubs need, what clubs and fans need. But that's not going to get you particularly excited. You know, your ticketing, for instance, that's not an exciting thing. We're going to try and make it exciting, but you want it to be reliable and resilient. But you basically want your ticket to work, your payment to be taken successfully, and for your ticket to work. That's not an exciting moment. It's a really interesting entry point as far as data is concerned. Because what usually when you're buying a ticket, maybe not in your case, John, but you give really good quality information because you want to make sure you receive that ticket. But we can start moving into the space now. And so this kind of latest round of investment gives us that runway to start building what is it that the club and a fan wants. And we can start doing some of the interesting things, kind of whether we're kind of tailoring communications around kind of what's happened on the pitch or what the fans done in the past, kind of what they've, you know, what behaviors they've done in the past through the app. We're starting to, I guess, we've got a very long list from clubs and fans about, you know, we'd love to do this, can you solve this problem? And I think we need to be quite judicious in what we choose. But I think we can start building things that gets back to this Sports OS thing. It's, you can't get this with a ticketing provider unless you build all of this tech on top. I'm really excited actually to start building not what a club needs, but what a club wants.
Start adding all of the bells and whistles. Well, that's fantastic. And congratulations on the successful seed round. Allie, when you were joking about the, you know, it's a badge of honor considering how difficult it is doing that.
Right, so. Now, as well, it's a turbulent market. So it was, we're lucky we've got some good partners now all in. So that'll come out.
Well done.
No small feat for sure. So congratulations. With that, I believe we're going to bring our conversation to a close. Allie, Carl, it was wonderful having you. Again, congratulations. If people, you know, want to find out more information on your company, what you're up to, where is the best place that they can go to do that?
Yeah. So www.fanbaseclub.com. from a website standpoint. And I would say just jump onto LinkedIn, copy and paste our names and connect.
Awesome. Well, thank you again. Thank you both for taking the time. Really enjoyed this conversation. John, any last words?
A lot of fun. I love the Sports OS concept that you guys are pushing forward. Again, thank you for being here, guys. I mean, we watched from quite some distance now what you guys have been doing, and we're getting closer and closer to all the wonderful things that you do in your international expansion. It's super interesting. Seed round is amazing. Congratulations, right? And I'm looking forward to learning and hearing more, right? And also looking forward to seeing how we can lean in and help, right? So hopefully a lot of interest from this is what you guys are doing. I think is unique at the level that you guys are playing is incredible, and the speed at which you've got there is incredible. So congratulations. You guys are absolutely at, I think, the beginning of something that is completely massive. So thank you for spending some time with us. Thank you for putting up with sort of my silly questions as well. I appreciate it. And we'd love to have you guys back on in the future and see a then versus now conversation. That would be amazing. But thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Amazing. Likewise. Thanks so much.
Yeah, really enjoyable. Thank you, guys.
And with that, we're going to bring our episode to a close. But we always welcome your feedback on this episode and for future episodes. Until next time, take care, and we'll see you soon.